Hi everyone. Welcome back. My talk today is very similar to a talk that I gave to my Thursday night Sangha. And it's really the reflections of my own experience in learning of and practicing the Paramis. I still have a long way to go. But for this talk, I'll go month by month as we practiced. But I'm going to ask you, as you listen, to note that your own experiences during the past year and what resonated for you with the Paramis. What Parami was difficult, or which one provided the most insight. So these will be the reflections we could discuss in our small groups after I'm finished. As we know, the Paramis are 10 states of mind, attitudes, and behaviors that lead to peace. They're very interrelated with each other. So in February, we began with generosity. So, my reflections on that month, I also talk on that month where about my own experience in stinginess and growing up in a household of scarcity, and how it was that I had to learn by watching others that gave freely. And generosity. I mean, one example of my life was my ex-mother-in-law, who I was always awed by the way she would just give away stuff that I would never have thought of giving away. And also, I learned a lot from another Sims teacher. Or a teacher that wasn't at Sims, Bonnie Duran. Bonnie Duran is the person that I felt that has exhibited just some of the most generous attitude that I have ever seen in any person alive. But learning in the Paramis also taught me that generosity also had to do with generosity of your time with people. Generosity of giving others, listening to other people and their perspectives that may not be yours. Being generous with, of course, people who don't have enough, who like giving to the people who are on the street selling newspapers, and just not having to think about it so much, just giving of yourself in generous ways, and the openness to share with others. And also the contemplation of abundance was part of that. And me always thinking abundance meant having a lot, having more. But knowing that abundance was really about being content with what I have. In March, we spoke about morality. And so for me, that part of it was learning about what irritation, people who irritated me. Or how I felt irritation about other people. During the Thanksgiving week, I was with many family members and one family member who just kept irritating me and irritating me. But I took the time to investigate what this meant. What was this irritation? Why was I so irritated about this person? And it was like I was suffering more than this person. This person wasn't suffering. So I had to cultivate that it wasn't, that it was just me, that the irritation really meant nothing, that it was useless, that it was just something that would come and go because I loved that person. So it stopped me from causing any harm or stopping my facial expressions or my physical attitude towards it. And I was very surprised that it formed a lot of energy within me and a compassion for that person and really deepened my love. So for me, the morality was feeling the discomfort of it and also morality for me is contemplating the five precepts. Not killing, not stealing, not misusing sex, but particularly not engaging in false speech and not indulging in intoxicants, which in the past would have been a very big challenge for me. In April, excuse me, I'm getting over a cold, not quite there. In April, we started with renunciation. And that's really cultivating the capacity to abandon our attachments, our clinging. And that's a big one, because there's so much that we could cling to in these days. We could cling to our opinions. We cling to our, for me, it's books, clinging to books, clinging to any things that we have, clinging to different kinds of ways of entertainment, clinging to the internet. So it's giving that up. Renunciation, giving some of that up and understanding that this clinging is us suffering again. Letting go of the habits of patterns of my mind, coming to conclusions all the time about things, having opinions. And I think it was, Ajahn Chah, who was asked by some of his students about, what is the biggest problem for your new, for his new disciples? And he said, opinions, views and ideas about all things, about themselves, about practice, about teaching, about the teachings of the Buddha. So giving up our opinions. It's a hard one, especially in this day and age, because we have a lot of opinions about what's going on in this world. And trying to find the equanimity in that, which I'll cover later. Is part of that. So, yeah. So letting go of those habitual patterns of the mind and cultivating an intention to loosen attachments to material, sensory pleasures, self-obsessions. I've had quite a few. And destructive emotions. And realizing that holding on to anything impermanent is brings dukkha into my life. So learning to be content with less stimulation, particularly in my case of the internet and the consumption of buying things, I've learned more in contemplating the paramis. In May, we talked about wisdom. And what I've learned in my meditation and in my daily life is to really be able to contemplate the implications of impermanence, mostly. The impermanency of things. And the suffering and the dissatisfaction that I have in life, and also to work on non-self. I'm part of a year-long study with Tweri about non-self, and I'm still learning about that. And but it also taught me to discern the awareness of the true nature of reality. You know, what is the truth? Is it true? What I'm thinking at this moment, is it, can this be supported? You know, so there's many different ways that wisdom has come to me, and particularly in realizing what the truth is, and realizing the truth of the Noble Eightfold Path. And that means the, you know, right view and right speech and resolve and action and, you know, right concentration, those things about right concentration. So mindfulness has been really a lesson in wisdom for me and that support my practice and my life because, directly looking at my mind, I find, is wisdom. Looking at what's happening at the moment for me is wisdom and being mindful of it. And that's the wisdom of mindfulness. In June, we went and we spoke about the parami of energy. And so that means, you know, energy, the effort and the diligence and enthusiasm. And it's also the effort to cultivate wholesome actions, you know. When I'm like, my children and I have a weekly call. We call each other and we talk about all different things. And sometimes I just have to tell myself, you know, you don't need to say everything. You don't need to give your opinion all the time. And it takes, for me, it takes some energy to come up with that, to develop that wholesome action, and to avoid unwholesome actions at the time. And you know, I'm developing energy if I care about myself. And I was able to, during this time being sick, to tell myself, even though I didn't have much energy, but I had the energy to tell myself to take care of myself. And I also feel that right now I feel the energy of all of you and today in giving my story and my experiences, you know, and I gain energy from the Sangha. That's it. I want to capture that with a poem and why I meditate. And this is by Jennifer Pearson. I love her poems, Jennifer Pearson. Excuse me. Why I meditate: to feel the breath in my body. Open my heart like a giant sunflower. Because I suffer. To feel the longing for spirituality, to keep dementia at bay. To boost my immune system. To be kinder, the kindness that comes only with practice. Because life's too short and I relish slowing down. To choose love over fear, to make generosity a habit. To be amazed by the changing of each season and to smile more. Because as I grow older, I am more comfortable with emptiness, to build bridges, to fall in love with my old broken body and to make all the green in the world more vibrant, to simply feel gratitude deep in my bones, even for spiders, even for the cracks, even for the grief. In July, we discussed the parami of patience. And I think that was a hard one for me, patience. I've always thought of myself as patient. But in contemplating the parami of patience, I found out how really impatient I was. And, you know, patient with wanting to get my opinion out there, and patience in conversations and wanting to interrupt, and patience by not listening to others, and patience by just going forward without really thinking of the consequences. So, you know, when we're engaged in some sort of interaction, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, we don't want the mind to get swept away by it. When we're engaged in some kind of task or chore or duty, and when I'm cultivating patience, that's when it comes to my mind, you know, a weight, an anchor that isn't pulled around all over the place. So being patient also has a lot of equanimity in it. It's like almost every part of me has a source of equanimity. But also we need a lot of patience in our practice, I feel. I found that I need a lot of patience in my practice because I want to get to nirvana. I want to get there. I want to get to be the, you know, the most enlightened person that I can be. But knowing that, but realizing that it takes time and takes patience in our practice, in my practice, anyway. And it's not only there, and when I sit, don't have, you know, opinion of where I have to be at the end of my sit. Just being is enough. Excuse me. In August, we went into truthfulness, and that meant, you know, paying attention. For me, truth as growing up as a child, truth was a big thing. You know, my mother made sure that it was a big thing. We had to be truthful all the time. But then as I grew up, I saw that, you know, there were times that lies would come out of me and I wasn't even thinking about it. You know, white lies or blue lies or, you know, and so being truthful is, you know, just a big thing. I mean, and being aware of the Four Noble Truths, which we'll study this whole next year, you know, and knowing that the truth of the cause of suffering, getting to understand that more and more every day, and getting more to understand that we can end suffering with truth. So truth is a path that leads to the end of suffering. And learning that was a big thing for me. In September, we covered the parami of resolution. And in the list that was given to us, it said the degree in which we are willing to follow our aspiration to practice. And one thing I want to say is that I learned during this past year was that the Sangha was a fundamental part of that. And being a part of Sangha and the support that was given by my Sangha. And in September, I did a practicum at Sims. It was a day long. Maybe some of you came there, and it was on loving kindness. And my heart was so stirred by the support of the Sangha that day and how they just rallied around me, and I didn't have to do anything but go on with the course. Everything was done for me, and with love, and even participating. And throughout the year, the Thursday and the Sunday Sangha that I'm now a part of, the support of the Sangha in my life there's no comparison. I can't even say how wonderful and how fundamental it is to my practice and how it gives me energy to continue in the practice. And that's part of my resolution. In October, we covered loving kindness. And I talked a lot about loving kindness. I did a day long on loving kindness and metta. And metta is very close to my heart. And some of you may know that I'm a little bit addicted to TikTok. I love TikTok. I've learned so much and had so much joy. And lately, there's this young woman from Great Britain who has doing poetry on TikTok, and her name is Kit Burks. And I want to read one of her poems, which I thought about would fit here in loving kindness. Imagine a world where we could see it all, the invisible weights people carry, a world where above every head a small sign hung telling the truth we hide. I'm grieving. My heart is broken. My wife is sick. I've just lost my job. I'm trapped in unkind memories. Think of the woman who rushes past you, her eyes fixed on the ground, not rude, but surviving, thinking only of the hospital room where her love lies fading. Would you still mutter at her carelessness? Or would you offer her the kindness she doesn't yet know how to ask for? Picture the man at the till fumbling with his change, mumbling sorry far too many times, his cheeks flushed with embarrassment. Would you see more than awkwardness? Would you notice the weight of a redundancy letter folded in his back pocket? The one that reads, "We regret to inform you." What about the girl in the cafe staring into her coffee, ignoring your attempt at small talk? Would you know she's drowning in memories that twist and bite like wolves? That her silence isn't coldness but survival? If we could read the quiet truths, the secret battles carved into every heart, how different would the world feel? How different would we be? We might not snap so quickly. We pause, breathe, and let grace lead. We'd see not strangers but fellow travelers on roads just as rocky as ours. Maybe the grumpy neighbor wouldn't seem so gruff, the impatient driver not so cruel. Maybe we'd realize they're not unkind by choice, but tired from carrying more than we can see. Slowly, the world would shift. Each moment of understanding like a spark in the dark, each act of kindness a flame passed hand to hand. Because if only we knew, we'd stop demanding perfection and start offering love. Isn't that sweet? I just love that poem. Love her. And lastly, in November, we covered equanimity. Equanimity was one of the first things I learned when I started to study the Dharma and being a practitioner at SIMS in the late 80s. Equanimity is pretty hard at these times. It's a hard one. You know, trying to be trying to be equanimous in these times. I can't even think about it. I'm sure that many of you have. Excuse me. Especially willing to concede all the that's going on outside our own opinions and judgments. But trying to keep a balance in our lives. And that's how we go back to the Buddha, the Sangha, and the Dharma. And I'm going to end again with another poem by this young person. She's just a young person who has been through a lot in her life. And as I said again, her name is Kit Burks. She's from the United Kingdom. She must be in her 20s, that young girl. She's pretty wise. It's part of being human to cradle the brightest joys and endure the sharpest tragedies. It's never about choosing one or banishing the other, but learning to let them coexist, joy and sorrow. They're not enemies, but reluctant roommates sitting side by side at the kitchen table of your heart, each taking turns with the stories they tell. Joy will sing of sunlit mornings and laughter that feels eternal, while sorrow whispers of quiet nights drenched in shadows, where every breath feels heavier than the last. The trick, I think, is not to barricade them apart, not to pretend one is more real than the other. Instead, let them learn to lean into each other. Let joy warm the cold hands of grief. Let grief deepen the gratitude for joy. It's a balancing act, a tight walk over the abyss, never knowing which will get the upper hand. Some days the weight of sadness will tilt the scales. On others, happiness will rise light as air. And here's the secret. When you carry them both, when you hold that fragile equilibrium with a trembling grace, life begins to shine in unexpected ways. The cracks in your heart catch the light like stained glass, turning even the darkest moments into something strangely luminous. When you look back, you might just see it, the beauty in the mix, the poetry in the mess. And that is what makes life so unbearably beautiful. Not the joy, not the tragedy, but the way they held hands and carried you forward. And there I end my reflections. Again, I want to ask that we're going to now go into breakout rooms. And so I'd like you to reflect on what Paramis shined for you, or what were difficult for you to unfold, and what resonated for you. Hi, everyone. We could spend a few minutes. Anybody want to reflect or share what they've heard?
Yes. Sorry, Sue first, or can I go?
Oh, yes, Sue. Sorry.
We can.
Go ahead, Sue.
Oh, I thought you said Sue. Sorry. So I just want to say I never realized this before the breakout group, that just like equanimity can permeate all of them, so can renunciation. And because there's so many of the opposites that come up with each of the paramis, and bringing renunciation to the opposites, to the stinginess, the impatience, the la la land, whatever, you know. So I'm going to play around with that some more. You might hear more about it next Sunday, because I'm the person then. But how we bring these along with us is what I'm going to talk about next week.
Great. That's good. Hey, Sue. Thank you. Sorry.
While you were going through all the months and stuff, it was good because I could go back and look at my notes and pick out things that just really struck me or that I had missed. And the first one that I saw was on generosity. And I forget who it was that talked about it, but they said that in Pali, generosity was considered a verb, and that in the West, it's a noun. And it was like, wow, yeah, that really speaks to, that just speaks for me. So thank you for that recollection. And then the big one was renunciation. And I think, Suze, this was your talk. And the one thing I wrote down that I just circled and, you know, said yes, is everything I have let go of has claw marks all over it. And it's like, yep, that's been, yeah. And about 20 years ago, I participated in this event, and the speaker guided us through a meditation to find a word that kind of personified what we were working on or about or whatever. And mine came up as acceptance. And that word was given to me by, of all people, my parents. And it was like, I'm sorry, you don't have a right to give me that word, but that was the word that they gave me. Hmm. And it has always come back up for me. And so I look at renunciation and acceptance as one in the, not maybe not one in the same, but definitely really, really connected. And maybe acceptance in terms of just accepting what is, and that it doesn't mean that it's the end of the world or that it's failing or that I can't move on, but that it is. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that reflection. Yeah. Excuse me, still have this cough. Any more reflections?
I could say something. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I was reflecting a lot on generosity and how different it is for me now that I am retired, that I've been retired all this year, and I no longer bring in enough money to live on, basically, because, you know, you can't live on your pensions. And so I'm drawing from my savings, and I realize that I'm like going back and forth between being really contracted and, oh my God, I've got to save money, and or I've got to get more money, or this and that, or just, and then just being relaxed and, oh, it'll work out. Things always work out, you know. And that's been really kind of a new thing for me. It's suddenly I have more time than money. And it's usually been the other way around in my life. And I also realized around generosity that when I do give freely, there's this little part of me that wants people to know and say, oh, she's so generous, right? And so that's been very enlightening. Yeah. And I could go through every one of them, and there would be things like that. But that's the one I hit on today.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Judy. That's good. Impression. Yeah. Anyone else? Hi, Jean.
Hi. This has nothing to do with pyramids. But I've made this observation and it came really strong to me today. I've described being in a sangha when Tim is the teacher. It's like riding in a Cadillac Eldorado. It's big and wide and soft and there's no bumps. And when you're in the car with Tuwera, you better buckle up. You might be airborne. And with you, Nina, I realize how quickly you can open my heart. And I don't know what that means to you and what it means to me, but when I listen to you, you are the essence of loving kindness. And I appreciate that very much.
I'm so glad. Thank you.
I have to protect my heart. Not really, but.
Good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
My heart. Anyone else? I wanted to add something about metta. I'm like, you know, I'm a metta. Metta groupie, I guess you can call me. That since I've taken on trying to practice metta and doing metta every day, you know, saying metta verses every day, I find myself answering emails with metta phrases or writing, you know, cards. I wrote a card to my granddaughter the other day congratulating her on her dance recital and putting metta phrases in there. So it's like, you know, putting it into my practical life has been a part of that too. Well, if there's no one else, we're going to close for the day. All right, so in ending, I'd like for us to think of people or groups that we would like to share the merit of our practice with today. May all beings without exception be safe and healthy. May all beings without exception be calm and peaceful. May all beings without exception find joy and wisdom. I hope you all have a wonderful day and week. Happy holidays for those who celebrate them. And mucho metta. Goodbye. Thank you.